Welcome to Cross Body of Work. I am Evan.
I am Javier.
And it's our first social distance recording. Well, it's the first one since social distancing orders went into place, but we've been social distancing since the beginning.
Yeah, we have been social distancing since the beginning. We've been doing it right. We've been washing our hands for at least 20 seconds. We haven't been going outside. And quite frankly, I don't know what to do with myself. So here we are recording an episode.
So this is the first real post-pandemic start episode, post-NBA cancellation, post-sports cancellation for us. Javier, you're a big sports guy. How have you been passing the time?
I'm okay. actually, I'm lying. I'm quite devastated. You know, so, all right, quick little tangent here. I went to the Atlantic 10 tournament in Brooklyn, New York, because I covered my school as a men's basketball team, and they were playing in that. So I woke up at 5:30 in the morning. We left at 6. We get there. We spend an hour lazing around in good old Brooklyn, New York, because our parking time hadn't come, and it cost more to park early. So we just, yeah. We get to the arena. Everything's wild. We figured, like, there was already going to be played with no crowd or anything. And UMass, which is the school I go to, was the first game, which was at noon. So we get there. We're sitting courtside. I'm, like, enjoying the luxury of having my first real media experience. Because, like,
your first big tournament, right? Your first thing to cover.
Real thing. And, like, it was really cool. Really cool experience. They gave me a free umbrella, which was dope. and like, yeah, literally, like, both teams came out for shooting rounds. And they did the whole thing. And then literally right as the timer expired and we were about to, like, get into the part of the game where they announced the lineups and all that stuff, the SID for UMass, who's, like, the media relations person, pulls the head coach, gets him on the phone. And as the coach is on the phone, he, like, walks onto the court, starts pulling his assistants, like, calling them towards him, starts calling players off the courts. And that was the point where we realized that the tournament was canceled. There was a whole press conference afterwards. We did all this stuff. But, yeah, pretty quickly it came out that all college sports were canceled. Everything was done. The NBA had already been suspended at this point. Everything pretty much had already been suspended at this point. But, like, I just really wanted at least that one game, and I didn't get it. And now my college life is over. I'm done covering sports until I can find a job, which who knows when that's going to be, because, like...
Somebody hire this man. Once sports exist again, hire
this
man.
Sports are done. So it's like, yeah, someone hire me, preferably with a good job covering at least college. And, yeah, that's all I care about at this point.
Has been super weird.
It's been terrible. I got sick. I got strep throat last week. It is strep throat. It is not the C word. We are not even going to say it for fear of being demonetized.
Correct.
But yeah, it's been very scary, to say the least, especially with my mother, who is very protective and very scared that I do have the, thing, but I do not. It's okay. I'm recovered now, mostly. You can kind of hear my voice is a bit nasally, but that's where I've been, Evan. How's everything with you? Because I know you've been impacted pretty heavily, too.
So my job has been changed a little bit in terms of the work I do. No sports has been strange. All of the news, I write the wrestling roundup for Full Press Coverage Wrestling every morning at 7:30, Monday to Saturday, and all of the news for the last 2 weeks have just been about cancellations or what's happening with WrestleMania and the switch to two nights and the fact that it's going to be pre-taped, all of these different things. By the time you hear this, it will have already been taped, according to, you know, PW Insider. But so that's changed kind of my day-to-day, what we actually see. You know, I'm not going outside a lot. The biggest thing that's happened has nothing to do with, you know, the current pandemic. One of the biggest things that's happened to me is I've lost my personal Twitter account. Somehow my account got reported. I don't know what for. The last thing that I retweeted was a friend of mine saying, "Sorry, I'm late. I was performing Miley Cyrus's The Climb in my car, and I couldn't stop until I reached the end. And now I got reported. I don't understand." But the way that Twitter works, if you get reported, is you can ask for, you know, verification codes. And I guess my personal account I made when I was a second or third year in university, and I have never changed the phone number since then. I reached out to my old phone number via text, hoping that somebody would respond to maybe give me the Twitter code. Nobody has. I don't think anybody has the number anymore. So currently, without a personal Twitter account, looking for ideas and suggestions for names, because as I've said a couple times, Evan Gomes without the underscore is taken by a dude who never tweets. So I can't have that. So if anyone's got any creative Twitter suggestions, let me know. But you know, still running the Crossbody Work Pod Twitter, and Twitter has become a huge part of my life now that, you know, I don't really go outside. Don't really go out and do anything.
Yeah, this is very clearly there's I just want to say it, there's no respect for Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana, a true queen, because if this is the reason why you were suspended and removed from Twitter,
disastrous.
I don't want to I need the algorithm fixed. I want Jack to edit this. I need him to correct it personally, because this is ridiculous.
Absolutely blasphemous. But aside from that, you know, it's been a lot of watching old wrestling, a lot of switching between Instagram and Twitter all the time on my phone, and just bouncing between those two apps. But, you know, it's affecting everybody, and I hope everybody stays safe. If you are listening to this, you know, while practicing social distancing, that's great. We hope you continue to tune in. We're looking at doing some bonus episodes maybe in the near future, since both of us have a little bit more time.
A little bit, I'd say, yeah.
I'd say a little more time. So we're hoping to give you guys some more things to listen to, so keep tuned for that. But we should probably get into the episode.
Yeah, I would say so. This is, what are we, something like 7.5 minutes in? I'd say we're at the perfect time to start what's going on here.
If we're 7 minutes in to episode 7.
Yes.
Javier, who are we talking about today?
We are talking about the son of the son of a plumber, but not the one you're thinking of. No, we are talking about Dustin Rhodes.
The one without the neck tattoo.
As far as we know.
As far as we can tell, yeah. But no, we're going to talk about Dustin Rhodes. And so why is it kind of good timing, good planning by us that Dustin Rhodes is who we talk about at number 7, Javier? Why does that matter?
Because I'm not sure if you guys knew this or not, but Dustin was Gold Dust with the WWE.
Probably, but his most famous iteration is Gold Dust.
Yes, but at one point after the fact, he had this character named Seven. And Seven, he was a lot like Goldust, but just very creepy and stalked children and stared at them through their windows. Yes, literal children, not figurative ones. It was very weird.
It's very weird.
And Evan, I'm just going to let you go from here, because quite frankly, I don't really know how to follow that one up.
Seven was one of his gimmicks in his return to WCW, and it was very strange. There are a lot of things that we're not going to be able to cover in Dustin Rhodes' career, because he's been doing it for so long. He debuted in WCW in 1988, and fun fact, he's also the first wrestler recovering who's still going, who's still doing it right now. DDP did have a match recently, and Trish only had a retirement match in 2019, but Dustin is going to be, you know, on AEW every week. So yeah, he's the first one recovering who's still adding to his body of work. But we're going to get into covering Dustin's career. And the way that it works, if you've never joined us before, we cover 5 matches from a wrestler's career. We review them. We try to pick them from near the beginning all the way through to the end of their career. Talk about things we liked, things we didn't, interesting things we spotted. I have a tendency to find things in the crowd because I get distracted easily. We talk about the whole career of the wrestler and kind of break down their value, kind of their contribution to the game, if you might say. So we're going to look at Dustin Rhodes, someone who's had a huge impact on wrestling and who's been a stalwart for a really long time. Consistent work, and one of the most consistent workers, I'd say, you could find in wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. And a guy who's really reinvented himself a lot. We hear that a lot. You know, guys like Jericho, guys like Matt Hardy, you know, guys who have pretty much made a career of being different. Dustin Rhodes is another one of those guys. He's gone through a lot of different character changes, some good, some not good at all. But that's, you know, that's just the way it goes. And for a guy who was never really in the main event spotlight, he's one of those people who's very well known. He transcends a lot of different generations of wrestling. He's obviously wrestling royalty. And you know, he's got talent. He's very good at every aspect of wrestling. And while, yeah, he was never really a top draw or a top guy, he was always one of those people who was very entertaining in the mid card, who regardless of where he was on the card, he was going to entertain you. And I think that's really what's going to be remembered from Dustin Rhodes when he finally hangs up the boots. But like we see him now, he's not the same guy now that he was 10 years ago. He's not the same guy. He wasn't the same guy 10 years ago that he was 10 years before that. So, you know, it's really cool to see Goldust progress in his career. And yeah, I'm really excited to get into this episode.
Dustin Rhodes has such commitment to his character. Yeah, the characters aren't necessarily always going to land. We're not going to talk about Seven in WCW. We're not going to talk about Black Reign in TNA. We're going to miss out on a couple other things like all of his TNA work, as well as his team with Booker T in WWF. We're not going to talk about that. All great things, but all very different iterations of this man, Dustin Rhodes, but also of this character, Goldust, being his most iconic character for sure. With that, I think we can crack into the first match, and it is quite the match. WCW Wrestle War 1992, and we've got ourselves War Games,
to quote The Match Beyond.
Billy Regal. Yes, The Match Beyond. Yes. And it is Dustin Rhodes is a part of Sting's squadron, which is Sting, Dustin Rhodes, Ricky Steamboat, Nikita Koloff, and Barry Windham against the Dangerous Alliance, Steve Austin, Rick Rude, Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and Larry Zbysko. It's a five-star match, baby. We're starting out with a certified five-star banger. What were your thoughts overall on the match, Javier?
The first thing that got me here, that is a trend that we'll get like it kind of in this episode, is that Dustin Rhodes has been in some really high-profile spots.
He has been in some real good matches.
And he kind of sticks out like a sore thumb, yeah, but like, good for you, man. I mean, he was in a match with all these legends of the business. Like, this was a big, obviously, everyone who knows pretty much anything about the early days of modern, in air quotes, wrestling, knows about this match. I mean, Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance is one of those matches. Obviously, you mentioned the five-star tutelage that it's got, but it's a lot more than that. It's just a famous match. It's a classic match. It's a match that I'd seen before. It's a match that probably a lot of wrestling fans have at least heard of, if not seen before. And for him to be a part of this is not only big for his legacy and his career, but also for where he was in the moment. Like, yeah, he was Dusty's kid, but he was also a big star. And for him to be on the babyface side of this was really, really cool to see.
He'd only debuted in WCW 1988, so he's been around for a little bit. This is him in his natural gimmick, so he was the natural Dustin Rhodes. I don't think they were really shying away from the fact that he was Dusty's son. Very much a lot of Dusty influence on Dustin's character. Uses a lot of the moves. He looks a lot like him. He looks like a lot more like a trimmed, a little bit more jacked version of Dusty, a little bit taller even. But they really didn't shy away from, you know, where Dustin Rhodes came from. But yeah, I'd say, you know, you said he sticks out like a sore thumb a little bit. I would say that even if you asked any of those other guys who were in this match, they'd be like, oh yeah, and Dustin's just up there with us. Like, if you look at his longevity in the business and his ability to continually put on good matches, I'd say they'd probably say that he's right up there with them.
Yeah, I'm just more referring to the fact that he's, you know, in the same boat as a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, as a Sting, who's the world champion at this point, you know, as a Nikita Koloff. These are, like, top guys ever, you know, and for him to be there, to me at least, sort of stood out like a sore thumb. But I guess it stands out more in the match that we'll get to down the line here. But this match was really cool. I haven't really gone back to see a lot of the old War Game matches. And it's definitely been, like, years since I've seen this. I mean, this was probably, like, in my early days of having the WWE Network in probably, like, 15 or 16. It's been a long time, and I forgot how low the roof of the cage was. I mean,
it's so low.
Yeah, it's probably, like, 8-10 feet at most.
Yeah, if that. Guys look like they're going to hit it on every move.
Yeah, like, when you get to... There's no standing on the top rope here. No. If you stand on the top rope, you're hitting it. You know, if you stand on the middle rope, you'll probably hit it. It was really cool. And my favorite part of the match was this one part. I forget who Sting had up, but he was just sort of like pressing him up against the roof.
It was Rick Rude. He just kept military pressing Rick Rude into the top of the cage, and it looked awesome.
Yeah, this match was really, it was just so cool.
For a very long match, it goes by very quickly.
Yeah, it kind of, I don't know, to me it didn't feel like that long of a match. It goes by quick, mostly because it's a War Games match. Like, you know, there's going to be a countdown. I was really thrown off by the fact that they gave a full minute countdown. That threw me off. It was just, I don't know, it was refreshing. Like, you have Paul Heyman out on the outside. I'm sorry, Paulie Dangerously.
Yes.
You had Medusa. You had, like, a lot of these people just sitting outside. The match starts off with Steve Austin and Barry Windham. Like, those two guys went at it. Rick Rude, I think, comes in second. So the heels get the advantage, because the heels always get the man advantage.
The heels always have to get the man advantage. It makes for an easier structure for the match, right? It just makes more sense for the heels to have the advantage and the baby faces to be fighting from underneath. And then whoever that last baby face is who gets to come in like a house on fire.
Yeah. And, you know, in this match, I believe it was Nikita Koloff.
Yes.
That distinct,
I believe,
honor.
So.
Nikita Koloff came in and he ran roughshod on everybody.
Yeah.
My thing is, I love, like, this kind of era of wrestling, because it's where it starts to get a little bit more athletic, but still has a lot of that old school style as far as selling, as far as, like, the way punches are thrown, the moves that are used. And I kind of like that, because it's sort of like a lot of the, like, British strong style or Japanese strong style you see now, but it's obviously worked. But it just looks exaggerated, and it looks really cool. And I liked a lot of the visual elements of this match, especially at one point. I think it's Larry Zbyszko is getting, like, hounded with punches, and he's just, like, acting like he's having a seizure, and it was so awesome. And I love Larry Zbyszko, by the way. I can't wait to do an episode on Larry Zbyszko somewhere all the way down the line. But, like, it's just so cool to see these guys, because, like, everyone was so in tune with their selling, and there's 10 good workers in this match. The commentary is on fire with Jesse the Body Ventura and Jim Ross, and everything about this match just worked for me.
There was a lot of good work in the little bits that make this match stand out to me. Things like Paul E on the outside before the match starts, having like an actual huddle and a game plan, and they're drawing things up, and he's like, okay, we're gonna have this person go in next, and this person, and this person, and this is the whole plan. And I love when managers actually are showing their value to who they're out there with, instead of just clapping and
the
cheering them on.
The original head coach.
Yeah, they're actually coaching. They're actually giving them some advice. Talking a little bit more about Dustin, since, you know, this episode is about Dustin Rhodes. When he enters, a lot of moves like Dusty, he does an elbow, does an atomic drop, a lot of Dusty type energy. But Dustin is 23 years old in this match. And as much as, yeah, in terms of the legacy, maybe he is a little out of place. But really holding his own in terms of the same quality of selling, the same quality of athleticism. I think he brings a lot of athleticism to the match. A lot of athleticism you don't really see in his kind of gold dust years. You know that he's a good worker and he's got some good moves, but he was never expected to be an athletic specimen then. Here, the natural gimmick, you got to be a little bit more of a showman, right? You got to have those explosive moves. And he was really good, especially when he first entered the match.
Yeah, I thought the thing that really stood out to me in that portion was he got the crowd behind him. You know, you expect the natural gimmick. He's a white meat babyface. He's the son of Dusty Rhodes. You know, it very much like if this gimmick happened now, like the guy's Roman Reigns. Like he's getting booed out of arenas.
He's Rocky Maivia when Rocky started.
He's getting turned heel almost immediately, but it worked with this crowd, you know? Like Dusty's such a beloved babyface that a lot of it rubbed on to Dustin, but Dustin also like knows how to work the crowd, you know? It's very clear that he grew up with the business, that he just has this ability to not only connect with people but to entertain. And like he's got the white meat babyface gimmick going, but he really works it, and he really like in a match like this especially, it's kind of what they needed. You know, they just needed a little bit of youth and a shot of energy, and really that's what Dustin was, especially when he first came into the ring. And when you look at who he's with, you know, you got guys like Sting, guys like Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, guys like Barry Windham. Like these are white meat baby faces. So he very much fits in with the crowd, and it really just works. And I thought Dustin, especially when he first came into the match and he starts, you know, doing his Dusty stuff, and then he hits his Bulldog, which was his finisher at the time. You know, you just get to see a lot of cool moves, and it's a side of Dustin that you don't really see much, you know, because unless you really go and dig deep into the WCW stuff, that's the only time you see that stuff. You know, after he gets to the WWE and he becomes Goldust, his career really becomes about his character more than his work. So when you get to see the work done here, it's just kind of a breath of fresh air, and I really did enjoy it.
We've talked a little bit about the baby faces. I want to go a little bit about the Dangerous Alliance just because how cool are the Dangerous Alliance. When they come out, they look amazing. They remind me of the Undisputed Era, not in terms of their, like, obviously the Undisputed Era, the way they talk is a lot different because it's 2020 in comparison to 1992, but that same level of like, we are the best, we know it, we don't have to prove anything to you people. And you look at it and you just see this array of just talented, jacked, good-looking guys, and you're like, oh, they're gonna come take what they want. And what a crew. Steve Austin with hair. Anytime you get to see a Steve Austin with hair match, you're gonna get a good worker.
Stunning.
Not that Steve Austin without hair was a bad worker, but Steve Austin with hair was like a top-notch ring guy.
Yeah, put him in the Tokyo Dome and let him work.
There you go.
You know, Stunning Steve was fantastic. I still can't believe that. You know, him with the Dangerous Alliance, him with the Hollywood Blondes with Brian Pillman. I just don't know how WCW really managed to not make this guy a top star, because he just had it. He did. You see it in this match. He has it. It's baffling to me. Vince pulled a fast one and managed to turn him into the biggest star in the history of professional wrestling. But like, this match just really highlighted how much good talent was in WCW and also in the Dangerous Alliance at the time. I mean, Medusa was fantastic. She got such a reaction from just climbing the cage and dropping his cell phone down.
Like, I was so surprised to see anyone on top of the cage. You think a lot about how, you know, these matches evolve, how you look at the first matches and compare them to the War Games matches we're getting right now, how different they look. But the second someone started climbing the cage, I was like, in 1992, someone's about to go climb on the cage? And yeah, she doesn't necessarily have anything really happen. She just drops the phone in to use the weapon, which is great.
Sting runs up and like meets her.
Scared
me even more, because it was like you could see how far down the fence was starting to dent in when Sting was standing up there. Because Sting's a big boy.
Oh, it had a lot of give. Yeah.
Yeah, Sting. Mind you, guys, Sting is all of 6'3", probably 6'4", and he's jacked. You know, that guy weighs all of probably 220, 230, 240, somewhere around there. So for that fence to be holding up that much, it's scary. It really was.
This thing is built a 6'2", 250.
Oh, jeez.
Big boy.
And he was just pure muscle at this point. It was scary to sort of see that happening, and I was just like, all right, everyone get out the way. Sting, get off the top. Like, I'm starting to get scared here. Which really, like, sort of builds into the match, kind of. Like, it's a dangerous environment, not only in the storyline and, you know, but, like, in like, actuality. Like, that's a dangerous environment. Like, yeah, it's like a really rickety cage, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it's not the most well constructed. This isn't an elimination chamber.
Yeah, it isn't. And I thought that the use of the cage was great. I mean, who didn't get their face rubbed onto the side of the fence? Like, everyone did, I'm pretty sure. At one point, Austin got it the worst. He was getting drilled into that thing.
There were so many people bleeding in this match. Dustin Rhodes has the same thing his dad does, and the same thing that, like, Steve Corino Flair had and Ric Flair had, which is that perfect blonde hair that when blood goes in just soaks red immediately.
Yeah.
Which, you know, adds to, you know, gives you a couple of badass points
being able to bleed like that.
You want to talk about the finish?
Yeah, so the finish came when my boilers, all right, so they, like, destroyed, I believe it was the middle, maybe it was a top turnbuckle, something like that. Zbyszko gets like a little like piping that they use to get the rope onto there. And I believe it is
Bobby Eaton
who's holding Sting, I think it is. Yeah. And then Zbyszko tries to use the pipe to hit Sting, but Sting moves out of the way, so he gets Eaton on the arm. And you know, Sting gets Zbyszko, he just hits him, puts him out of commission, immediately charges Eaton and puts him in like a weird arm bar, but like the kind of arm bar you kind of see like, who's that guy from the Grizzled Young, veteran, Zach Gibson?
Yep.
Yeah. He puts him in that kind of arm bar type situation. And, you know, it lasts all of like 15 seconds before Eaton's just tapping out and the match is over. Everyone confronts Zbyszko afterward, especially Heyman, who's like, "What's happening? What's happening? What happened?" And you know, you get a hey, but yeah, you know, you get it's a lot of confusion. It was a weird finish, to say the least. But the babyfaces come out on top. What a match! Honestly, I really enjoyed this one.
I had a lot of fun watching this. I think it was more, I had a lot of fun in the same way that you have a lot of fun watching old Royal Rumbles, where it's like, yeah, look at the stars. Look at all the star power. I think this is a better match than a lot of old Royal Rumbles, but still, just seeing the amount of like legends in one match was great, and I think Dustin Rhodes, you know, did his part. Quality match.
Yeah, he definitely did his part. I really, like, I can't sing the praises of this match enough. Like, you guys really need to watch this one. Over any of the matches that we're going to give here. But this one especially, you know, Dustin really held up his end of the work. There's just so much good storytelling, so much good character work, and just so much good wrestling. Like, I love this match. If you haven't already, give it a watch. You're not going to be disappointed.
Moving on to match number two, it is the second match for Dustin Rhodes in WCW, and it is a Bunkhouse Brawl. Spring Stampede 1994 against Bunkhouse Buck. Great name. What were your thoughts on the match?
I was really confused by this. I'd never heard of this match. I'd never seen this match. I had no idea what I was expecting from this match. So just a little breaking of kayfabe here. You know, we have a master sheet where Evan, mostly Evan, puts out the links for me to go watch the matches. After I see the Dangerous Alliance versus Sting Squadron match, which I was really excited to watch, I see versus Bunkhouse Buck 1994 Spring Stampede, and I was like, but I also see the word bonus next to it, so I'm like, oh, this is probably just a bonus match. Nope. This was a real thing that I had to go in and watch. It was interesting. I never heard of this before. I don't know who Bunkhouse Buck is.
I'll give you a little bit of background on Bunkhouse Buck, because I knew this was going to happen. So Colonel Parker, who is the manager of Bunkhouse Buck, had issues with Dustin Rhodes for most of 1994. This was Rhodes' major feud for pretty much all of 1994. And Bunkhouse Buck was literally brought in as a client just to face Rhodes, specifically in a bunkhouse match. So the match is named after the man. The man is not named after the match. It's not like, you know, it'd be like if they called a Hell in a Cell, like, Undertaker's prison match or something, right? Or you know, maybe Great Khali and his Punjabi prison match.
There we
which
go.
Which is an underrated match type, by the way. But no, it's not. Buck was an indie wrestler who worked out of Continental Championship Wrestling. And the bonus, so this is the bonus clip that I added on, is that his real name is Fuller. In 2010... the guy who was Bunkhouse Buck appeared on an episode of SmackDown, I believe, as Jack Swagger's dad. That's the bonus fact for you.
Which so I watched.
I have really nothing else in terms of how he was as a wrestler, but he was on SmackDown in 2010. We'll link to that on our social media, but weird. Weird guy, weird match, but it's one that I've heard so many times in, like, anthologies or hearing about WCW, like that middle period of WCW in the mid-90s. This is a match that always came up for me, so I wanted to check it out. Did you like the match?
I thought it was entertaining. I don't think it was a good match as far as, you know, the quality of work. It's not going to the Tokyo Dome, brother, but it was entertaining enough. I thought the Colonel was a bit annoying, which was exactly the role that he needed to play, so good on him.
Yeah.
I thought Bunkhouse Buck was kind of in over his head as far as, like, I don't think he was ready for WCW. But
this is the opposite of the last match, where in the last match, Dustin was in there with a lot of, like, seasoned vets who knew everything and were able to do it, whereas in this, you know, just 2 years later, Dustin is the one expected to really carry the whole match. Like, he's the one who's really leading the charge here in the singles match.
Yeah, and the match starts off with Dustin really in control before the Bunkhouse rules start really kicking into effect, and Bunkhouse Buck was kind of able to weasel his way up by using, what was it, like, the leather strap and all that jazz.
Yeah.
It was just like, there was so much. I don't even know what the rules of the match are. But
my understanding is it's just a hardcore match.
Yeah, it felt like that. It just felt like a hardcore match, but they used their belts and they dressed up.
And they're dressed like cowboys, which I will say, I have been playing a whole lot of Red Dead Redemption 2 recently. So Dustin's gear of knee pads over jeans with cowboy boots was right up my alley. I love it. Loved it.
Meanwhile, I have not been playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption lately. I've been playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto, so that tells us where we lie on the spectrum. But anyways, Bunkhouse Buck. I keep having to look down at the sheet again with all the matches because I keep forgetting what this guy's name is.
Bunkhouse Buck.
Bunkhouse Buck. I just honestly don't really know what to say for this match other than we've got a guy who was just pulled from the indies pretty much to fight a guy who's 25 years old, and a pretty good wrestler, but I don't think he was ready to really carry a program of this caliber on his own. So you get a match that's not great, but is very physical, is very, like, you know, weapons based. It's a hardcore match, like you mentioned, and it's got a lot of character stuff in that, the cowboy and all that stuff. But, like, yeah, no, I just wasn't the biggest of fans. And quite frankly, Evan, I kind of want to hear your thoughts on the match.
So we're 2 for 2 in Blonde Dustin bleeding in matches. And I thought that that made it seem a little bit more intense. I thought the match was okay. I think it was missing something. I think if I was more invested, I think if I'd gone back and watched some more things between Colonel Parker and Dustin Rhodes, I would be more invested in him bringing in this new guy, and there'd be a little bit more. Because I think the thing that's missing is the real heat between wrestlers, because we're so used to the actual feuds being between the two guys who are in the ring, whereas it's not really the case here. The feud is Dustin versus Colonel Parker, and he doesn't really get his hands on him. It does explain a little bit as to why Dustin is so preoccupied with Parker for the whole match. Because I think near the end, he hits the bulldog on Buck and then goes after Parker on the apron almost immediately.
Yeah.
Like, he's not really focusing on Buck at all. He's really focusing on trying to get some comeuppance on Parker. And I think without the context of the rest of the feud, it hurts this match kind of in a vacuum. I think Dustin, again, proving that he's a good wrestler. But I think also it could be argued that matches like this and booking like this might be why he wanted to do something so severely different in WWF once he got there, because he's very much being booked as like Dusty, but he's not quite Dusty.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I'm getting from him. He's an everyman. He's just like you, but they're not giving him the same rub that they would have given Dusty, that they did give Dusty. So to see him in that similar mold without the level of success, you could see why he'd go to WWF and be like, Goldust, something entirely different. Nobody even knows it's me.
Yeah, I thought, you know, obviously a really important part of Dustin Rhodes is the fact that he's 16 years older than his brother. And it's very publicly out there that his relationship with Dusty wasn't as good as Cody's relationship with Dusty. Mm-hmm. You know, they I believe they have two separate moms. And
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I believe they do. And you know, it's very out there that, you know, Dusty was very involved in Cody's life. As Cody was growing up, you know, he was coaching all of his youth teams. He was, you know, he was just there a lot for Cody, where he wasn't with Dustin a lot of the time, because he was still kind of active in the wrestling, and he just wasn't able to be around as much. And that obviously took a great toll on Dustin, you know, and as, you know, things like drug use and alcohol abuse started happening with Dustin, it left a real strain on their relationship and stuff. So, you know, you could see where him sort of being booked like Dusty, and sort of having to have his career emulating the person that he really had a lot of issues with, sort of takes a toll on him, and why he would want to make that shift otherwise. Because he, you know, it's one of those things where you don't really want to be your father in this situation, because he doesn't have a good relationship with his father, you know. So, like, yeah, I could see where a lot of the stuff that happens after WCW comes in with Dustin, and it was just really cool to see this part of it, because it's really a lot of the stuff that built the groundwork for what came next in Dustin's career.
I think with the right booking, or with the right push behind him, I'm not saying Dustin could have been as successful as Dusty was in those territory days, but I think he could have filled a similar role for WCW. But I don't think they were as interested in that being the case. And I can't speak for Dustin, but it didn't seem like that's what he was interested in doing either.
Yeah.
So instead, he gets to move on to WWF and to being Goldust, which is much different, a much bigger change.
Yeah. Did we say the finish of the match? I'm just going to let you quickly.
We didn't, but what we'll get to right now. I don't quite understand why this was done in the way it was, but we'll get to it. It was the old loaded punch. So Bunkhouse Buck gets a fistful of, or gets something in his hand. I don't exactly see what it is. Punches Dustin. That loaded punch is enough to knock him out for the three count. Not actually illegal, because I believe this is a hardcore match. You know, people were whipping each other with belts and everybody was bleeding. But still underhanded. So I'm not quite sure why it was done so secretively. But, you know, Bunkhouse Buck picks up the win. Colonel Parker really picks up the win and ends this kind of strange hardcore match.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb and say, you know, WCW had a lot of weird rules. back in the day. So maybe it was one of those things where you couldn't have a loaded whatever regardless of the match type.
Yeah.
I don't know. If anybody has the answer to that one, I mean, go by all means, let us know. Because we are genuinely, I mean, it's been stated before, we are young people talking about wrestling from before our time, so we don't really know what's going on here. We don't know what the rules were at the time. So, yeah.
One of the most exciting things about Dustin's career, though, is that by the time we reach the last couple matches, they're ones that we have watched and have seen because they're from our time as wrestling fans. But now it's time to move on to when he switches to WWF and becomes Goldust, starting with the Goldust debut vignettes. Now, have you seen these before?
I have seen these before. I was a big Goldust guy when I was a kid.
I'm a huge Goldust mark. We haven't really gotten into this yet. I'm a huge Goldust mark.
Yeah, I loved Goldust when I was a kid.
Goldust with Booker T was like one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah, so, you know, my thing was, so I've mentioned this on multiple podcasts. I have an older brother who watched wrestling before me, which is really what got me into wrestling. And I remember a lot of the old Goldust stuff. I remember him being that androgynous wrestler, you know, towing the line when it comes to sexuality and stuff. And I just remember him as the jokester. I remember him as the guy who was with Booker T, you know, the joking, you know, pushing the envelope, but more kind of with his actions rather than like towing that sexuality line like he was in their 90s. He was just really the jokey person. And that's the Goldust that I knew. That was the one that was really funny to me. So to see this stuff, like I would just go on binges and like I'd search up Goldust videos on YouTube, you know, when I got of age. And yeah, like I found a lot of this stuff and I found the vignettes and I was like enthralled by it. I was like, whoa, like this is not something I've ever seen in wrestling before. Like, and it's something we haven't seen since. So it's like, it was just really out there and really cool. And I was just captivated because it was honestly like, I'm not going to say it was up my alley as far as like weirdness goes, but like it really kept me captivated. And like the videos were only like a minute and a half. But, like, I was paying full attention for the entire minute and a half.
It's such a shift from what you see with Dustin Rhodes. It's such a complete transformation and complete buy-in to the character. And I think that's what makes it much more believable is you see that this is not Dustin Rhodes. Even if you knew that that was the guy who was under the face paint, which a lot of people didn't, you where like something has changed. This person is different. You can kind of see that there's this whole new character and he's captivating. He is mesmerizing. His cadence is different. He like, I don't know if it's in either any of the debut vignettes or not, but he would eventually add the like biting thing that he would do at the end of his breath. It's hard to do without. Yeah, that's pretty good. So different. And if I am a fan who's seeing these debut vignettes, I immediately like, I want to know what is going on with that person. Like, I want to see them in a wrestling ring because I don't understand. And I want to see what they do. And I think one of the big things that was really successful for Goldust is the fact that once he got in the ring, the character work continued. He was always doing character work while he was wrestling.
And I think what was really important for the Goldust character was who they put him in there with. They put him in there with Razor Ramon, who was like the suave, cool guy. You could definitely see Razor Ramon being kind of like the homophobic, like, whoa, man, get off of me kind of person, you know? So when Goldust was there and doing that kind of stuff and, you know, Razor would respond in a way that was very natural for that character. For anyone who just kind of doesn't want to be basically sexually harassed mid-match, like, you know, and getting rubbed up on a lot, it was just really cool. And that was, I think, the perfect way to introduce Goldust to the world because it was kind of like a shot in the arm as far as a different entertainment value went.
Check out the vignettes, check out the debut vignettes, and see them for yourself. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to look at our first match from Goldust in the WWF. All right, on to match three. Now, when it came to picking Goldust matches, specifically Attitude Era matches, as we know, the Attitude Era was a lot of like crash bang entertainment, not long matches, not a lot of like quality, drawn out epics, and we wanted to have a match that had a little bit more meat to it. So we picked one of the most famous 5-on-5 tag matches probably in history, and it's a match from Canadian Stampede, 1997, I believe. It is a 5-on-5 match where the Hart Foundation takes on the very, very strange team of Goldust, Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Legion of Doom, and Ken Shamrock. It's our second 5-on-5 match with both Goldust and Austin in it, so that's fun continuity.
Yeah.
But overall, a very strange match right near the beginning of Goldust's run. What were your thoughts on this match? Had you seen it before?
I had seen it before. I've remarked multiple times about the old good old Attitude Era playlist that was on the WWE Network way back. This was obviously a part of that because this was the Hart Foundation becoming a thing and all that jazz. This is the match that I said that he really sticks out like a sore thumb because his team is Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Stone Cold Steve Austin iteration of this. Hawk and Animal, so the Legion of Doom, and Ken Shamrock.
The world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock.
Yes, Ken Shamrock, who is, like a couple of years removed from UFC 1, and quite literally, probably, him and Royce Gracie are the two best mixed martial artists in the world at this point. Yep. So it's really, it's just, he sticks out like a sore thumb. He just does. You've got an ass-kicking drunk redneck in Stone Cold. You've got Ken Shamrock, who's a lunatic and quite literally murders people for a living. And you've got the Legion of Doom, who are just like these hard-hitting, crazy, you know, tag team who's been around for well over a decade at this point and is
absolute
known.
Absolute legends.
Yeah, they're absolute legends. And then you've got Goldust.
And the team up for this was Goldust's idea. In the storyline, the idea to team up to face the Hart Foundation was Goldust's idea, which I think is even stranger that he would be the one to be like, "Let's all get together and take out the Hart Foundation."
You know, I'm really like happy you chose this match because I love this match, because I'll just watch anything that involves the Hart Foundation. But I'm kind of shocked you didn't pick the, what was it, WrestleMania 8, the backlot brawl?
Fair.
I really am shocked you didn't pick that, which is fine. But, like, I feel like that's the most famous Goldust match as far as the WWE run goes.
It's also got the WrestleMania shine to it, right?
Yeah, it obviously did get the WrestleMania shine to it. Him and Roddy Piper for the Intercontinental Championship. It's a big match. But this was an interesting pick because, you know, again, he sticks out like a sore thumb. It's not really a feud that people remember between him and the Harts. I believe.
But his feud was really with Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
So coming out of this is the feud with Brian Pillman that had to be cut short tragically because of Pillman's untimely death. But it's where he and Pillman were feuding over Marlena, which is Terry Runnels.
Yes, who I think at this point is still Dustin's wife.
I believe so.
Real life wife. I know that doesn't become the case pretty much soon after this, but I believe at the time she is still his wife, which, wow. It's a fun match. Again, I am a Bret Hart mark. Like, I love Bret Hart. I will watch any Bret Hart match ever. Throw Stone Cold Steve Austin in there, and I will watch it even more. For anybody that has seen the Broken Skull Sessions that came out with Bret Hart on the WWE Network, it's fantastic. Go give it a watch. I love Bret Hart. I would die on the Bret Hart hill. And I thought Bret was fantastic in this match. I really love the work all around. This is just a really entertaining, good, well-worked wrestling match that told a story. There was really cool, and you know, I love the crowd reaction because this is in that phase where Bret Hart is the biggest babyface in Canada and in Europe, but he is like the biggest heel in America. But it doesn't matter because this match is in Canada, and Bret Hart is like freaking, he's the Stone Cold in Canada, you know?
Not,
like,
it's not even, it's just in Canada. It's in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. It is in the heart of heart country.
Yeah.
And he, like, the whole foundation can do no wrong in this match. And, you know, WWE loves to throw out the, like, oh, they're cheering who they normally boo, and they're booing who they normally cheer. This is the bizarro world. This is where, you know, five of your most popular acts on the babyface side will get booed to no end because of where they are. Because Canada, I will speak on behalf of the other Canadians. If we see a Canadian doing anything, we lose our collective minds. So if you have five really good, like, and they're not even all Canadians, but if the five Hart Foundation guys, and they're coming in to represent Canada, we'll throw everything behind it. Absolutely.
Put the title on Kevin Owens in Montreal, you cowards.
I would die. I would love
Anyways,
that.
Anyways. But yeah, no, this just to build on the fact that it's the Hart's backyard even more, the whole Hart family is there. I mean, when they all come out, you know, you see British Bulldog, Davey Boy, with his wife, who is Bret Hart's sister. You know, it's really cool to see that. And to see the whole family, you know, you've got Stu Hart, you've got his brother, who I believe was going to be a wrestler, who is a wrestler, who is going to be the person that Bret feuded with aside from Owen. I always forget his Bruce Hart. There we go. He gets involved in the match at some point as well. You just got the whole family there, and they get involved in the match as well. And it's
Austin
just so
tries
cool.
to beat them up at ringside.
Austin tries to beat them all up. Like, it's so crazy to me.
Which,
you know,
very in tune with Austin's character.
Yeah, Austin just doesn't care. Austin will fight the entire locker room if he wants. Stone Cold Steve Austin is an absolute gem of a character. And, like, I am so upset that I was born in 1997. Like, I was probably born before this match even took place. You know, so it's like, it's just something that, like, obviously flew by the wayside for me because I just wasn't around for it. But I love this match. I just love it. I do. It's peak Bret Hart. It's really, we're getting there with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Goldust was, again, sticking out like a sore thumb. He wasn't really doing the Goldust thing. He was kind of just Dustin Rhodes, like the natural. He was working like he was the natural Dustin Rhodes, but in Goldust gimmick.
See, I would say that he was doing a little bit more than that. I wrote down for his work in the match, solid hand, but he's still like expanding on what the Goldust character is. He doesn't do anything like over the top the way he does in some of his other singles matches. But, you know, he's still got a good grasp in terms of changing the mannerisms. Even the way he kind of moves around the ring is different in comparison to his WCW stuff. So I'd say it's a little different. Obviously, he's not out there to be the star, right? There's enough stars out there. He doesn't need to be the one to kind of control everything. But overall, a good hand in the match. But, you know, when you're in there with Bret and Austin, you're going to be overshadowed just a little bit.
Yeah. Especially Bret and Austin. At this point, Stone Cold was at, like, he was really getting there to the peak of his powers. Like, he's just a couple of months away from winning the Royal Rumble, stunning Vince McMahon, and beating Shawn for the belt, you know. And Bret's a couple months away from being out of the company completely. So this, we're getting there as far as, like, the top levels of these guys'
careers.
The
biggest things, yeah.
Like, these are the two probably biggest stars. You throw Shawn Michaels in there, three biggest stars in the entirety of the wrestling business right now. So it's, you know, to capitalize on this the way they did, I mean, they're in Canada. The crowd was hot the entire time.
The building is so loud that the camera shakes.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the match.
Yeah, I thought what was really cool was, you know, all the Hart Foundation guys come out to their own theme music, but they, like, wait at the entrance or on top of the stage for the next people to come out. And Bret comes out at the end, but there's, like, a slight delay to let the crowd sort of build up more before you hear the beginning of Bret Hart's song. And once you hear that riff from the guitar, it's just, like, everyone goes crazy. And he just comes out. He doesn't even stop. He goes straight to the ring like a total badass. And I just loved everything.
Very similar to CM Punk Money in the Bank against John Cena, because they also let it sit a little when they were in Chicago, and they waited for CM Punk, and the crowd was like ready to attack.
Just give me.
Yeah, very similar vibes. Somebody that I wanted to point out in this match who stood out to me for good reasons as like my unsung hero of the match, Brian Pillman is hilarious.
Yeah.
Little things like he's on Shamrock, he slams Shamrock's hand into the canvas and says he's tapping out. Like, what a little shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's good stuff. It's a damn shame that the world lost Brian Pillman younger than we might have hoped.
It's a damn shame that Brian Pillman's ankle went the way it did, because Brian Pillman was amazing. You know, we see it here. I mean, the stuff with Austin when they had their little go as kind of a nod back to that feud and that duo that they had way back in WCW. But like, you know, he has the one part where Austin just sort of like pulls his tights and you could see his butt cheeks clear as day.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just sort of holds it there. It's like a solid 30, 45 seconds of Austin pulling his tights and you could just see Brian Pillman's ass pretty much. And it's crazy. He just has a lot of stuff, especially on the apron too, where you see him like jump around and you see all these facial reactions. Like, Brian Pillman was a gem that I don't think people really got to appreciate.
If you want to watch a really good Brian Pillman match that's really quick, the debut episode of WCW Nitro, which is September 4th, 1995, he has a 6-minute opener match against Jushin Thunder Liger. It's one of my favorite card openers I've ever seen. I reviewed the first episode of Nitro before for Daily DDT, and I remember coming away from that being a fan of both guys. So if you ever want to go watch a good Pillman match, go check out that one. What were some other pieces of this match you really liked?
Yeah, the one part where it's Owen and Austin in the ring, and you know, they obviously had that feud for the Intercontinental Championship that, you know, Stone Cold broke his neck at SummerSlam and all that jazz. But like, you know, they had their little moments in there as well, and there was that part where Austin just sort of kept slamming his knee on the turnbuckle, or not on the ring post, and you know, it led to a lot of stuff. Like, Stu Hart got into his face at that point, I believe it was.
Yep.
You know, and he did it for a while, and that took Owen out of the match. And then Brett turns it around on him, and he gives it to Austin. You know, he starts drilling his knee into the ring post later on in the match, and he, you know, puts him in that. I love that. I love this move. It's when Bret Hart puts people in the sharpshooter, but it's on the ring post.
Yeah,
it's like they have to put the camera angle a certain way because, you know, Austin's obviously holding Brett up himself, like he's grabbing onto his leg and he's holding him up, and that's how they make it work. So they have to position the camera in a way that they don't catch that. And every single time he does it, I'm just like, oh, you person, this is like it. He gets me every time. Like, I know wrestling's fake, but like, this makes it so real to me. Like, it's real to me when Bret Hart does it, damn it.
Oh, of course.
I love Bret Hart so much. And then, you know, Austin obviously leaves as well. He comes back later on and he's like a house on fire. But
this is when he starts fighting hearts at ringside.
Yeah, this is when he starts fighting hearts at ringside. It's crazy. I just love this match. Obviously, Owen comes back towards the end. And that's kind of what leads to the finish. But this just becomes a big cluster at the end. And
kind of a weird finish. I'm not a huge fan.
I am okay with it. Just because in a match like this, it's kind of... I don't think you can have a straight up finish. I think it has to be like a wonky finish. Just because like... it's got to be an out of nowhere kind of thing. And obviously, I think you know the Canadians had to win this match. They just had to win this match. For the sake of getting out of here alive, they had to
for the good
match.
Of our country.
But like, you know, it was just really cool to see. And yeah, it ends up with, I believe it's a roll up, right? Owen rolls up. Who is it?
Austin.
Austin. Yeah, he rolls up Austin for the win. But like, yeah, you know, this is after the Harts interfere, the whole family. This is after like everything breaks down and there's brawls all over. And it makes a lot of sense for Owen to be the one that gets it on Austin, because Austin's the one that took him out of the match. Austin's the one that picked the bone with his family, you know. So for Owen to get that sweet revenge in the end, it was the perfect way to get the heels to really be kind of like the baby faces of the match.
Yeah.
Considering they were basically the baby faces of the match because of the crowd. So yeah,
Canada did not give them a choice.
Yeah, I personally like the finish, but I can understand why you wouldn't.
Just I think it's just because with such talent in the match, it seemed like you'd expect a little more of like a crash definitive finish. But once you gave me your explanation, it made it a little bit easier to digest. So I think you've sold me a little bit on the end of the match. We skip ahead quite a few years.
Yeah, I would say
16 years.
Yeah.
16 years we skip ahead. So this is skipping over a lot of Dustin's work as Goldust,
and Black stuff Rain. With
Booker T. We skip over Black Rain. We skip over Seven. We're skipping over quite a bit of things to go to Battleground 2013. It is the Brotherhood, which is Dustin, a.k.a. Goldust, and Cody Rhodes going up against Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins of The Shield in a match to win back their jobs. Both men had been fired by the Authority in the weeks leading up. So the stipulations for this match were it was Goldust and Cody with their father, Dusty Rhodes, you know, the king of NXT, in their corner against the Authority. If they won, they got their jobs back. But if they lost, Dusty would lose his job in NXT. Had you seen this match? Were you a fan in this time? Had you seen this match live?
So I did not see this match live. I was not watching wrestling still at this point. This was during that one low period that I had. I didn't really come back until after Daniel Bryan's WrestleMania 30 run. Mm-hmm.
Just missed this.
I just missed this. But I've obviously gone back and I've watched the stuff that I missed. And this is actually the one program that's really stuck out with me the most. I love The Shield. Mind you, mm-hmm. I'm a big Shield guy. I love that unit together. But like this right here was just gold. Like, can you imagine? This is crazy because these are like, no knock on Dustin, but four of the five people involved in this match are quite literally four of the like 10 biggest stars in the world right now. Yep. Which is it's wild to think about. Like, this match is the top babyface in AEW and his brother going up against the top guy in WWE on SmackDown and the top guy in WWE on Raw.
Like, with the AEW world champion at ringside.
Yeah, like, that's mental to think about. Like, it's so crazy. And, like, I love the build-up to this match because it really highlighted the character work and the proficiency that, you know, Dustin and Cody have of just being so good at drawing emotion. You know, that was the beauty of doing that Dusty Rhodes episode, is that we saw how good Dusty was at getting emotion, and he was working it on the mic. Like, you saw it in that little vignette that popped up, the little video package that popped up before the match itself. And, you know, it was so good. His interaction in the ring with Stephanie, his interaction in the ring with Hunter. Like, they clearly had respect for Dusty, and they didn't want to fire Dusty. They said it themselves. He's the guy who was molding the future of WWE, and he was doing a great job at it. But Dusty was just giving it to him because you messed with my baby's baby, and I ain't going to allow it.
Great interactions with Stephanie and Trips, sure. But Big Show being controlled by the Authority and working for the Authority when he didn't want to and crying when he knocked people out. Here's my hot take of the episode. I loved it. I thought it was a really enjoyable thing to have happen. And the reason being, Javier, you can't stop laughing at me. The reason being, Big Show crying is one of the funniest looking things in wrestling. He is a 7 foot tall giant of a man. And when he cries, it looks so unnatural. So him literally bawling before he punches Dusty Rhodes in the face is just such a surreal sight that you're almost kind of like, I get lost in it. And that's kind of what I look for in wrestling, is to be totally lost in it. So I remember watching that live and being like, he's not going to punch Dusty? Dusty's an old man at this point. He won't do it. And then there was a little part of my brain, a little smart part of my brain that's like, Dusty will do anything for the business. He's about to get punched in the face.
Vince McMahon will do anything.
Vince McMahon will get headbutt by Kevin Owens till he's busted open.
Vince McMahon would have his dead father exhumed and pow driven on TV for raping.
Jesus. I don't think you're far off. So let's go into the actual match. One thing that I pulled out of here is at one point, Michael Cole calls Cody the future of sports entertainment. And like, little does he know how right he will be and how much will be a pain in the ass for the WWE.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, like looking back on this match, and it strikes me even more. How did they not do anything with Cody? Like, how do you look at that guy and his youth, his ability on the mic, his ability to be able to grasp a character, and his work in the ring, and you don't at least put him in one main event? How is he not the current WWE champion? I don't understand. How is he not main eventing WrestleMania this week?
Because they made him be Stardust for so long. And in the same way that I think Dustin didn't want to be Dusty in WCW, Cody didn't want to be Dustin in WWE. And they kept putting him in this box to be like, oh, you're going to do the Stardust character. It's like Goldust, but not really. You'll figure it out. Like, he clearly has so much more to offer. I think if WWE hadn't pushed him in that direction, they could be riding coattails of having such a successful guy in their business. But the argument can also be made that in order for Cody to be as good as he is right now, he needed to leave. He needed to bet on himself. He needed to do the indie work, you know, working for ROH and working for New Japan. He needed to do all that in order to get to where he is. So, two sides of the coin.
Yeah, and say what you want about Cody Rhodes. You know, nowadays, you may have your opinions on All Elite Wrestling and may have your opinions on what Cody has done and what he said about WWE since his departure. But, like, the guy is very much a main event talent. You know, he should have been opposite Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, opposite Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Like, this guy is money. And, like, he just is. He prints money. He's a good-looking guy. He's a good worker, good talker, good, you know, guy with his character, babyface or heel. Like, how is this guy not? I just don't get it. This match alone proved that he is at that level and that he should have been pushed at that level at some point. And I just can't. I'm baffled by it. I really am, but that's beside the point. We get to the match. It's a great match. I genuinely love this match.
So Goldust had only come back for this storyline. He was a participant in the 2013 Royal Rumble, but hadn't really been seen aside from this storyline where Cody had crossed the authority, and then he came back for a good one-off match against Orton on Raw, and then this match comes at Battleground. And Goldust in this match is, you know, vintage Goldust. And I know it sounds weird because we've just gone over so many years of Goldust's career. We kind of skipped a bunch of it, but this is the Goldust that people think of, I think, in the modern era. At one point, he gets a hot tag from Cody, and it's just that classic Goldie hot tag. Atomic drop, the drop-down uppercut. It's all just crisp and clean. The man hits a snap power slam like nobody's business. Great work from Goldust in there with, you know, as you mentioned, in the actual match, three of the best world champions in the world, three of the top guys in the world right now. You know, they're a couple years off from that as of yet, but these are all still really talented young guys. Goldie is, you know, getting up there in age at this point, and he's still got all the mojo. He still got it.
Yeah, and he's keeping it there with the Young Bucks, you know? He's doing the thing, and I think it's really important to remember how good Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns were as the tag team champions. Like, they were having great matches with a lot of different teams, and, you know, it's really, really cool because they are, yeah, you know, Seth Rollins had his run as Tyler Black. He was a great performer at the independent level. He was a great performer in NXT, and they've been having great matches throughout their run in WWE so far. But I think it's really important to note, like, these guys were still really young and still pretty green as far as their exposure to WWE goes. And here's Goldust just pulling such a great emotional performance. And to see the Shield in a like, this was their first real prominent storyline as far as it comes to ensuing emotion, you know? Like, they don't really do that kind of thing until they really got involved in the whole Daniel Bryan thing, you know?
They were mercenaries for hire up until this point,
really. Yeah, and here they are, you know, being the mercenaries to two guys who the fans really care about. You know, it's one thing when they're getting involved with CM Punk. It's one thing when they're getting involved with Daniel Bryan. But this is, like, this had real stakes. Like, people got so behind the Rhodes family at this point. Like, they were the biggest baby faces in wrestling. And, like, they just did this match. Just every, they hung on to every near finish. They hung on to every little thing. You know, even Ambrose on the outside. Like, the crowd hated him. And it's just, it was just so awesome. It really was.
Can we talk about Dusty's involvement?
Yes, we can.
Dusty hits Ambrose with a bionic elbow, and I could not stop giggling because Ambrose sold it like he had been shot by somebody. And, you know, he just took an elbow from like a 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the world of wrestling, old wrestlers still have all their powers. Right? So Dusty hits us that bionic elbow, and just such a good feel-good moment. And it gets you really excited, and the finish comes really quick after with one of the finest crossroads I have ever seen from Cody.
Yeah, like, Seth Rollins.
Full turn. Seth with a good sell, but like a full torque on it. A lot of oomph behind it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, you know, after Dusty hits the bionic elbow, you know, obviously Roman gets jumped on by Goldust outside, and you know, that's, you know, Cody's distracted by this, so Seth puts on, you know, he rolls him up. Obviously it's a near fall. I really, like, if I were watching this match for the first time and I didn't know what the result was, I would have believed that was the finish right there. When Seth rolled up Cody, but he didn't, obviously, and that leads to the beautiful crossroads that you mentioned, which to me, I think it's the best crossroads ever hit.
I think so.
It was beautiful. Seth sold it perfectly, and I just feel like it's made for people like Seth to take, just because you can get the full rotation on there. They could just, there, Seth is a bouncy guy. He could just like sell it like death. Like, can you imagine Ricochet selling the crossroads?
I was literally just thinking, have Cody and Ricochet met on the independent scene? And if they have,
can
I see Ricochet take a crossroads? Because that would be amazing.
I don't think they did. I think Ricochet signed with the WWE like maybe a handful of months, if not like less than that, after Cody left.
Yeah. Cody Rhodes versus Ricochet from WCPW, baby.
Oh, baby. Thank we will be watching that later at some point. I need you to send me that.
Thank you, old what culture. I love you to death.
Yes.
We'll put that on the social medias as well, with a big shout out to the what culture guys. Well, yeah. Now cultaholic guys.
Yes.
Shout out cultaholic.
Shout out cultaholic. But also shout out to Cody Rhodes, Dusty Rhodes, and Dustin Rhodes, because they managed to pull out the win here. They managed to get their jobs back, and they managed to do absolutely nothing with this momentum, because,
well, they win the tag titles.
They win the tag titles, but then, you know, they're just like a weird tag team in that Cody's still Cody Rhodes. He eventually grows his mustache back, and Dustin's just there as Goldust.
And they really didn't capitalize on the popularity of the two of them at once.
Yeah, and then, you know, then Cody becomes Stardust. And then it leads us down the winding road of AEW being formed. And now we get the great Cody on our screens every Wednesday. The Blood and Guts match is coming soon, and I'm excited for it.
What a great segue. It's almost like you knew what the last match is going to be. So the last match comes from All Elite Wrestling, Double or Nothing. And it is brother versus brother, Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes. Dustin reinvented himself. A lot of his old hits in terms of moves, but a little bit of a different aura to him in terms of the Goldust character has been stripped away, and it's just a new version of Dustin Rhodes. Cody talks about how he wants to kill the Attitude Era in the promos leading up to this match. this is the most recent match, one of the most recent matches we've ever covered on the show, and a little bit of my, I'd call it my hidden shame among the wrestling community is that I didn't watch a full AEW pay-per-view until, what was the one before Revolution?
Full Gear.
Yes. So Full Gear. Full Gear was the first AEW pay-per-view I watched in full. So I actually had never seen this match. I had only seen the Twitter clips of the end when Cody's voice cracks talking about how he needs a brother. I loved this match. I think in terms of match quality, it's the best match of the five we're watching for this episode. What are your thoughts?
I think that as far as match quality goes, I think the first match is still the best one. This was my first time seeing this match, actually. I hadn't gone back, and I know it's been like almost a year since the match took place. I just hadn't gone back and watched it yet.
There's so much wrestling to watch right now.
Yeah, there's so much wrestling to watch right now. There's so much wrestling for me to catch up on.
Now is when we get to catch up on wrestling.
Why do you have to? Why?
I know. I'm so sorry.
Why'd you have to remind me of that? You know, I was over here. I'm having a good time, and you had to take it away from me.
That's what I'm here for.
But anyways. This was my first time watching it. I thought it was a good match. You know, I thought it was there was a lot of story to it. I remember that part. I remember the build up to the match. I remember Cody, you know, breaking the throne, all that jazz. But I don't know. This just kind of felt like it wasn't like, it doesn't get to that top tier. And everyone like said this was probably like one of the two, if not the match of the year for 2019, regardless of promotion. I don't think so. I still think the first Gargano-Cole match was the match of the year. I think that match is one of the matches of the decade, you know, like matches of the decade, I should say. And I don't know. I thought, I think there were matches that year that were better than this one. It's a good match. It's a really good match. It just didn't hit that level with me personally.
See, I loved the dynamic of brother versus brother because I had been wanting WWE to do it properly and they never did. So when I saw this match was announced, I got excited because I know that Cody was good. I'd followed him pretty religiously on the indies because he's one of the first really prominent names to be released to really go like, I'm gonna make it on my own in the indies. And I remember following that journey pretty intently. So when AEW started, I was, you know, all in, excuse the pun. And when this match came in, I was really excited because, like we talked about before, I was a big Goldust mark. So I was like, well, let's see what Dustin can still do. I'm sad that I missed it live. But I really enjoyed this because there were a lot of parts that were unexpected to me. I didn't know what the dynamic would be in terms of face heel. And yet it seemed like Dustin was the face and Cody was the heel when I really thought it would be the other way around. And I love the way that they kind of played off one another. They really played into the fact that they know each other's moveset, that they have each other's moveset in some instances, and that they could predict what the other one was going to do. I thought there was a lot of good psychology that way. I love that Brandy randomly spears Dustin out of legitimately nowhere and gets tossed. Like, there were a lot of just like really fun pieces to it, and I'd say some really,
you
good
know what
crisp
ruined the
sequences.
Match for me, it was the fact that Earl Hebner was the referee. I just put it together. That's why the match didn't work for me, because the worst referee in the history of professional wrestling was on the job there. But anyways,
I gotta stop giving you Earl Hebner matches.
You really do.
You're just gonna rip on them.
I hate Earl Hebner. Earl, if you're hearing this, or Brian Hebner, if you're hearing this, I hate you. But that's beside the point.
Just throw in both Hebners.
That's beside the point. This was a good, it had a lot of good story, psychology to it. I thought it was really interesting that Cody was the heel, considering, you know, he's one of the biggest baby faces in the world at the time. But, like, you know, it made a lot of sense. Just because Cody was really the one that was coddled by Dusty.
Yeah.
You know, he was the one that had a lot of that love from the father.
So it makes sense that, you know, Dustin would kind of be the babyface in that, you know, I had the tumultuous relationship with our father. I didn't really get to, you know, have the time with him that you did. And it's not fair. You know, it's not fair that you were the loved child. So I'm going to take my anger out on you. You know, it made a lot of sense. But that wasn't really the story they were telling. It was a lot of, I want to kill the Attitude Era. And also, like, we never got this match in the other promotion. Let's just have it now. And I want to be the heel, Dustin. You know, it's...
I think there was a lot of good work in terms of the move specifically. But we talked early about how the first two matches, Dustin gets busted open. In this match, Dustin gets busted open. So he debuts new face paint, which is now his AEW face paint, where it's the half face and it's red and black. By the time the match ends, he is all red. He is so covered in blood. It is a little concerning, but there's one shot in specific, one shot specifically, where Dustin reverses the figure four and he's coated in blood. And it's very similar to that Austin blood from a stone image from WrestleMania 13. And I was like, that is like a great shot of how far Dustin has come and how good he is and how consistently good he's been as a wrestler.
Yeah, I definitely see the elements there when it comes to the whole Austin Hart thing. And I thought it was cool. You know, the tons of blood, obviously, it's a Rhodes family match. Someone's going to bleed like a stuffed pig. Yeah, it was scary how much blood Dustin lost in this match. It really was. And you know, my images of this match has always been Cody covered in blood as well. I just didn't realize that it wasn't his own.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, that was really scary to look back and see, because, you know, Dustin's all of, what is he, like 50, 51 years old? Somewhere along there. So to see him, I mean, he's an older guy. And you know, him bleeding this much can't be healthy. So, you know, it's definitely scary to see. But I thought the match, again, I'm not trashing the match. I don't think it's a bad match. I think it's a very good match. I think it's an excellent match. You know, I like the story that they told. I like the story that they told in the match. I like the finish. You know, Cody coming out in the end, finally putting his brother down. You know, the stuff with Dustin not being able to see because, you know, obviously he's freaking cut like a stuffed pig. But, like, you know, he's working his way through it. You know, Cody keeps himself within arm's reach. So Dustin's able to sort of keep it going and get some of his stuff in. The interference with Brandy, the unfortunate involvement of Earl Hebner. You know, there's so much to it. And I like the little details. I just don't think it's match of the year. And I feel like I am entitled to that opinion.
You absolutely are. I have this opinion, and it's something that I think a lot of people would say, that Cody is overall a better wrestler than Dustin. Specifically now, but even I think peak Goldust Dustin, people would still prefer Cody. One thing that Goldust slash Dustin is still better at than Cody is working punches. Dustin, we haven't really talked about the entirety of the pod, but Dustin's working punches are amazing, and in this match, you can hear a difference. Dustin's, you can't really tell that he's stomping Matt, and they sound like they connect every single time, whereas Cody's still, you just sounds like he's stomping on the mat. So one area, at least, that, you know, Dustin's got the upper hand on his little brother.
Not even just that. I think Dustin is one of the better work punches ever.
Yeah.
I remember, I think Bret Hart has the best work punch in the history of professional wrestling. I do. Bret Hart's punch is amazing. Austin is obviously up there. I think Rock has a great one. Even obviously he oversold everything.
Give me Biker Taker with some decent work punches.
Yeah, not even just Biker Taker, any Taker, yeah. Really. After the big evil gimmick, still to this day, you know, Undertaker's punches are fantastic. But, like, yeah, no, there's a lot of guys, but Dustin's up there. You know, he's got a fantastic work punch.
It's all that stuff that we talked about in the War Games match. the ability to sell while still being athletic, while still knowing your character. He is one of the last of that dying breed, of that old school selling. And so I think it makes him stand out even more as he continues to keep wrestling.
Yeah, and I think that's really his, where he really adds to AEW's roster, is the fact that, it's a last of a dying breed. You know, you don't really get that in Japan. You don't get that in Mexico. You don't get that a lot in the WWE side of things. There's only so many guys who are really there. Like, you've got Randy Orton, but Randy's, I believe he's already 40. You know, like, you've got, you know, some guys maybe, like, Roman Reigns throws a great punch, I feel like. But there aren't that many Roman Reigns who do that. You know, Baron Corbin's a bare-knuckle brawling champion. You know, he's a brawler. He was a boxing guy. And I don't really like Baron Corbin's punches that much, to be honest. I think it's just a pretty average punch. And there aren't many guys out there who can do what Dustin Rhodes can do. I don't think anyone on the AEW roster can do what he does. And I think that it works out fantastic for them that he's there because of it.
I don't think anybody can really do what Dustin does, what he brings to the table, especially now in 2020. There's nobody who's had that longevity, that ability to really continuously reinvent themselves. You know, Jericho does and Matt Hardy does. Now AEW has them, but they're of a different breed. I think they're more reinvention of character, whereas Dustin is, you know, a little bit same old, as he's been as Dustin Rhodes, but his ability to always give you a 100% clean match and be able to carry on and teach some skills to the younger guys, that's where his value is really gonna shine.
Yeah, and he's now in that tag team with, what's that guy's name? QT
Marshall. QT Marshall.
Yeah, who's a person who's, like, I could definitely see them, like, a year from now being the tag champs and having this great storyline, you know? And I'm really enthralled by that because, you know, I'm really excited to see what Dustin's career does from this point on in AEW, because I don't think he'll ever be a main event guy. I don't think he wants to be a main event guy for them.
No.
I want to see, you know, the types of matches he has. I want to see him in a feud with some of these younger guys who maybe don't really get the shine. Like maybe put him in there with Orange Cassidy. Why not? Put him in there with Orange Cassidy.
Why not?
I really want to see him fight Pac. I want to see that feud. Like, that's a money feud to me, at least, as far as, you know,
yeah, but you want to see everybody fight Pac.
And the stuff in the ring. I think it'd be awesome. You know, there's so many guys there who I really want to see him wrestle. It's just great. I think Dustin is in a good spot for where he is in his career. I think he's in a great role. He's there with his brother. You know, he's working comfortably. He's a part-time guy as far as the schedule goes because of the way that AEW runs their promotion. So he's not putting a lot of miles on his body at this point, and I think that's great for him physically.
Because he's done the time.
Yeah, great for him physically. You know, he has a daughter who's older, so, you know, to be able to spend time with her and with family, be able to be there with his brother. You know, we know about his demons, so it's really cool to see this guy be able to push over the mountain and be fine now for the last stretch run of his career as he progresses into the next phase of his life.
Now, I think we've kind of succinctly summarized where Dustin's at right now. What do you think, when people look back on the career of Dustin Rhodes, whenever he decides to hang him up and stop putting on the face paint, what type of things are people going to remember about Dustin Rhodes?
I hope that it's not that he wasn't able to live up to what his father was or what his brother will likely be. I really hope so, because, like, Dustin is a very unique talent in the wrestling business. You know, he's a guy who can do a little bit of everything. You know, he's the ultimate, I feel like he's the ultimate utility player. You know, he could be a heel, he could be a face, he could be your natural Dustin Rhodes, you know, good old all-American boy, or he could be Goldust. You know, he's a great person talking on the mic. You can put him in comedy, you can put him in serious angles, you can put him in the main event, you can put him in the undercard, you can put him in dark matches, put him in tag matches, put him in six-man matches, put him in every type of match, and he's going to be a good piece for that role. And I just think, like, he's just one of those guys who's just, he gets it, you know? And it was really cool to be able to go and see the progression of his career while doing this. And it's really cool to see him now, you know? I loved Goldust when I was a kid. I loved Goldust.
Still do.
When he was doing his stuff with R-Truth, you know? Like, he's awesome. And I'm really happy.
I was really invested in that Golden Truth stuff. And then he turned on R-Truth, and then nothing happened, and that broke my heart. Yeah. Because you could tell they didn't really have a lot for those two guys to do. So this was in a period when I was reviewing SmackDown every week, and they were like a highlight to me, is just seeing what kind of weird things they would do, because they're both just endearing characters.
My favorite thing was this little thing with Fandango, when Fandango had Summer Rae.
Oh my God.
And he was just like... He would just dance for Summer Rae, and it was the funniest thing in the world.
You can put Goldust in any combination of wrestlers, backstage personalities, in any match, in any segment. Dustin Rhodes will get something good out of it. That is a guarantee.
Dustin Rhodes was in a Darth Vader suit, gave Booker T a lightsaber, and gave us one of the greatest moments in wrestling history, where he was like, when he's just like, "Can you feel it, sucker?" I loved everything about it, you know. And whenever he in his tag team with Booker, and Booker would like go over the top, and you just see his face, he's just like, "Oh!" And he's just so always into great. It. His facial expressions were so great. The guy has the best comedic timing. It's just amazing. And like again, I really hope he doesn't get lost in the shuffle. Because his brother's going, like his brother already is, and is going to be one of the best faces in professional wrestling for years to come. Like Cody, lock him in as a top guy for the next 10 years at least, you know? And Dusty is obviously one of the greatest ever to do it at any level, whether it was backstage, in the ring, you know, as a coach, all of that stuff. And I really hope that Dustin doesn't get lost in that mix, because he is fantastic in his own right, and he should definitely be lauded just as much as those guys are.
He has managed to shine despite being in a family with two huge stars.
Yeah.
He managed to shine in his own right. And I know that WWE likes to be petty about things, but my hope is when he retires, Dustin is immediately into the WWE Hall of Fame. Goldust, one of the most iconic characters of the Attitude Era, and one of the most impressive long careers of a wrestler, I'd say.
And a loyal proponent of WWE's for many, many years.
Many. That wraps it up for us in looking at the career of Dustin Rhodes. I had a lot of fun. This was a good one.
Yeah, I had a really... I love these matches. You know, I don't think, aside from maybe the Bunkhouse Buck one, which was what it was, you know, there wasn't a stinker.
No love for Bunkhouse Buck.
There wasn't a stinker here. These were good matches split up through 25 odd years of wrestling. Like, that's crazy, you know?
That's the mark of a real good career.
Yeah, it's the mark of a real good career. I love this episode. I love Dustin Rhodes. And, yeah, definitely go check out some good old Goldust content, some good old Dustin Rhodes stuff. You can see him on AEW each week. You can see, not maybe not each week now, you know, who knows what they're doing. But you know, definitely, you know, in a time in the world where things are crazy, do yourself a favor, get some good quality entertainment with Dustin Rhodes, because that's really what he provides for people, is good wholesome entertainment, whether it's the way he works, his character stuff, promo packages. Just go look it all up, because honestly, that he's just so good, he's so entertaining, and he really will help pass the time.
Speaking of good quality entertainment, where can the people find you on social media, Javier?
The people could find me on Twitter at jmello sports. That is J-M-E-L-O sports. You can see my depression tweets on there, where I, you know. Maybe when I'm bored sometimes, I watch sports stuff. I didn't, you know, I just put, I don't know what day of quarantine I'm in anymore, so I just put day blank of quarantine, and then I just put some sort of nonsense. It's usually sports related. I haven't done one today. I'm going to tweet it out after this, but like...
follow along as Javier slowly loses his mind.
I don't lose my mind. I've been playing a lot of NBA 2K20. I miss basketball. I really miss basketball. I'm sad. Can we just stop this now? I miss the NBA.
I miss it too. You can follow the podcast at Crossbody of Work on Twitter. You can't follow me anymore. I mean, you can, but I can't tweet. So I'll be working on getting a new Twitter account, hopefully by the time this podcast drops. You can email the podcast at crossbodyofworkpod@gmail.com if you have ideas for future episodes and people we should cover. Don't forget to give us a like, give us a subscribe. We appreciate all of the listens we've had, all the downloads, but we want to hear from all of you. You know, share us with your friends. People are probably starving for content and entertainment, so get them to watch along. Watch all these matches, listen to us ramble about them. We're really glad that people are joining us on this journey, and we hope you'll continue. We got some bonus content hopefully coming for you guys soon, so keep tuned to that.
Yeah, and remember, this is a 5-star podcast. This podcast definitely makes it to the Tokyo Dome, brother. So feel free to drop a 5-star rating. Drop a comment. Drop it all on us. We need it.
Drop it all on us. And with that, we'll let you go for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good one.
See you guys.